Good day, South Dakota, and welcome to Tech Radio, featuring the Computer Guys. I'm your host, Kent Osborne. On today's program, we'll discuss the latest tech news, plus it's Chip and Pin Day. If your credit or debit card doesn't have a chip right now, it most likely is in the mail to you right now and is on its way. We'll talk about why. Also, if you own an iPhone or one of the new ones, you've most likely had a chance to download and try iOS 9. We'll have a review of the phone and the new operating system and its new features. And for you Mac users, again, some reasons why you may want to hold off on the latest update to 10.11. Plus, your calls, texts, and emails, Facebook posts as well. We'd love to hear from you. Send your questions via email midday@sdpb.org or send a tweet to @sdpb. Join the discussion on our Facebook page at facebook.com/techradio or call now, 800-524-3604. Email your suggestions or questions to our guests today, Joel Brovelite, Amos Asaf, and Jeff Litterick. That email address again is midday@sdpb.org. And welcome back to Tech Radio featuring the Computer Guys. We've gathered the experts here in Sioux Falls and in Pierre to talk tech today and answer questions you might have. In the studios of KCSD in Sioux Falls today, Matt Guru Joel Brovelite is here. Hey, Joel.
Hey, what's happening?
Everything. It's October now.
It's October. Welcome to October.
Absolutely. The Director of Technical Support at DataSync is here, Amos Asaf.
Hey, how's it going?
What's up?
Hey, not much.
Great. And from the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications in Pierre, Jeff Litterick joins us on the phone. Good day, Jeff.
Good day.
Great. We can have you call, text, or tweet or email your questions to these guys, or simply swing by the Facebook page, facebook.com/techradio. Post your comment or question there. Don't be shy. Our phone number, 800-524-3604 today. @SDPB is the Twitter handle, and our email address, midday@sdpb.org. Guys, we have a lot to get to today, but first, Joel, let's start with that very large phone you have in front of you.
Yes, loyal listeners will know that the last iPhone update was when they released the larger 5.5 and 4.7-inch phones that are now kind of standard in everybody's pocket.
Right.
And when those were released, the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus, I said, well, the 6 Plus is just too big for me, but I wanted to get one of each. And then my wife got the 6, and I got the 6 Plus. And then I just kind of held on to it. Mm-hmm. And then when it came for the update, I was like, I really like that size.
I
got the 6 S Plus.
Why?
So I have the larger one again.
Six. Why?
Well, you know, part of it was just total because all of my stuff, my case, my wallet, everything that I had was for that size. So part of it was just so I didn't have to rebuy all that garbage.
Convenience.
The other half was just I got used to using it. And because of the larger screen, I really use my iPad less. Not that I'm looking to use one or the other, but it was easy for me to just continue to use this device rather than switch to a slightly or a larger screen. So I really liked it. So I do have the 6 S Plus.
Right. I don't know how to describe it. It just seems like it's enough. I mean, that's the
size.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good size. I mean, honestly, I really like my wife's 6S, just the regular size, or not regular size. It's still quite a bit bigger than the previous version, 4.7-inch.
You just put that back to back with your phone. What's your phone?
They're identical in size because mine has a small ridge around it with a case. Mine is this is the part that gets me confused. So yours is the 6S Plus. Mine is the S6 Edge Plus. So there's a lot of confusion there, although they're two definitely distinctive phones. But
because yours is Android and a Samsung.
Right.
And his is iOS and Apple.
Apple, right.
Okay. And I imagine many of the apps do the same things, but this couldn't be bigger night and day as far as the operating system
goes. I sent my mother in to get, and I told her which one to get, she would go in and it would be a crapshoot as to which one she came out with because I'm not sure she'd be able to
Although with something like that, and I'm not, I'm not well, of course, I would advocate the Apple phone, but I'm not saying the one's necessarily better than the other, depending on who you are. I think if you did want to send your mother in, if you just said get the Apple phone, you're pretty much good to go there.
Right.
Whereas with a you can almost say get the Samsung phone, and that is almost as accurate, although they have so many models comparatively.
And this was released at the same time as another with the Note 5, so that would be – that is the difficult part of the Android is figuring out.
And then, yeah, once you get past like Samsung and maybe Google, then it's like a million phones, so many choices. Just makes my head spin every time somebody asks, which Android phone should I get? I'm like, Google, Nexus, maybe?
The big one? I don't know.
No, it's interesting. Actually, the back sides are the exact same side, so exact same size, top to bottom and width. So, same real estate.
I'm not surprised.
So there's some, you can call it, I guess if little rubber seals, there's tech. There's some new tech people have been talking about this phone, and that makes it sort of waterproof.
The iPhone?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard that. It's not advertised anywhere on Apple's website.
Put it in your drink, and let's see what happens.
No. I would not recommend that. It wouldn't surprise me if Apple was under the hood trying to make it more waterproof. I can't see. Now, I'll be proven wrong in this at some point. But, you know, you've seen some of those Android commercials, a few different models. They're waterproof. They show them in the water.
Right.
That just sounds like you're asking people to ruin their phone. I don't see Apple ever doing that. Even if it were to be waterproof, I don't think that they would. They might say it's more water resistant than the last one.
Right.
Which I haven't
Which is kind of what they've said.
Have they put that in, like, print advertising or on radio?
Maybe it's not from Apple. I've seen a couple of dunk tests on the internet.
I have no doubt that they're working on that all the time, because that just saves them, you know, replacement and hassle. You know, a lot of people think that Apple would like to replace your phone, you know, have you fix it all the time. But that's a big hassle for them. They make virtually no money on warranty fixes or out-of-warranty fixes on a phone. They'd much rather your phone work perfectly until you go get a new one. They never want anything to go wrong. It's not like a car where they make money on repairs. Same thing with Samsung. So they just don't want to fix them.
I mean,
so
the reason I want them to keep doing this and improving that is no matter how well you treat your phone, it's going to get wet, or in South Dakota, it's going to be in a dusty environment, or, you know, it's just going to be environmentally rough on a phone to live in this state. And
there's a reason why everybody knows the rice trick. I mean, if people didn't ruin their phone so frequently with some sort of water, whether it's spillage or dropping it into water, then it wouldn't be a big deal. We wouldn't know the quick go throw it in some rice sort of deal. It happens a lot.
Oh, it totally does.
Although, is there wood here? Because it's never happened to me.
Particle board right underneath.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, wait for it.
Yeah, it doesn't happen to me either. You know, I'll do the same knock. I think it's mostly just because I think it's because people like us tend to, not that we're better, but we have troubleshooted for the people that do it all the time. So we see the mistakes and the problems and the pain that they go through.
So I tell you. So you've had a time, you've had a chance now. You've had a couple of weeks since the iOS 9 release now, and you've got the new phone. So can you tell us a little bit about some experiences then?
Well, you know, one of the big differences that I noticed that, you know, and the new iPad is not out yet, but I'm actually awaiting that now because the 3D Touch, which was the new screen that they've come, which allows you to actually apply pressure, and it senses whether you're just touching the screen or whether you're, you know, pressing down on the screen. I've noticed that I use the heck out of that.
And that's just, you kind of peek at things?
Yeah. So
you press down on it and it kind of shows you stuff.
Instead of opening your mail like you would do there, I'm showing everybody. I tap on it and the app comes up.
Right.
But instead, if I want to go directly into a particular mailbox, I just press hard, press and then hold, and then I can go right to the inbox. That's also really nice where, you know, if you open the camera app, which everybody does to take take a photo, you just press on it, tap on it. But if you press on it and then press down on it, You know, it gives me four options where I can take a selfie, record a video, take a photo. It gives me the option without having to tap, tap, tap.
Almost like a right-click functionality.
It's exactly like that, except for slightly more intuitive because you don't have to use a combination of fingers. You don't have to use a right and a left hand. You can use the same finger. You just apply very minimum amount of pressure. I don't know if you want to.
I do.
Try that out. It's very intuitive. I do think that, I mean, this Apple did not come up with this of their own accord. You know, being able to have pressure-sensitive screens have been around as long as touch screens have been around. It's just they've made it now into a very thin device. And I think this is the future of touch screens, clearly, because that additional functionality allows you to do so many things. When you're very limited with your digits anyway on a phone or on a device, just because it's so, you know, clumsy, your finger is not a pencil and it's not a stylus, so you're a lot less accurate. But when you can, say for instance, when you're typing and you want to put like, you know, a tilde over the E, instead of having to press and hold and then go to a menu or something, you just press and then press down and you get the tilde. So it's very intuitive. So I think that's the number one thing that I noticed. And that's only on the new phones, I should say. New phones and new iPad.
And they've done an amazing job with the haptic feedback in that it actually feels like you're pressing down when in reality the screen doesn't move.
Yeah, that's I guess I forgot about that. So when you press down and then you press through it, it gives you a little half vibrate that tells you, okay, yes, you've activated that submenu. And, you know, as humans, we love that tactile feedback on whatever device we're getting. And sometimes auditory, that's the replacement for tactile. He said haptic, which is the basically it's just like a little the same thing that vibrates your phone when it rings. Instead of vibrating it a bunch, it just does like a half a beat vibrate and shows you that you've touched it. So that's another function that I think is really improved over the previous model.
Yeah, we'd like a little feedback on our show today. And there's a number of ways you can do that. Easiest way, if you're in Facebook right now and you haven't liked our page, at the end of the little Facebook address, type in Tech Radio. And go to that and like our page, and you'll see a post from today. It talks a little bit about chip and pin. Drop us a note there, a thought, what's going on with your tech. Or if you have a question, leave that there. We'll get to that on today's show. If you'd rather call us, 800-524-3604 is the number to call. And if you're a Twitter user, at SDPB, we'll get a message to us as well. We'll get a little tactile feedback.
That was a great transition, by the way.
Coming to my phone. Thank you.
That was local Emmy award winning transition there.
Yeah, I doubt that. So we have Amos Asaph in the studio today. Amos Asaph is here today from DataSync. Joel Brovelite in the studio as well, and in peer Jeff Litterick joins us, and we have a number of things to talk about today. Was there anything else on the phone? Anything that
both of those we talked about iOS 9. None of those features will come with iOS 9. That's just the phone itself.
Okay.
There are a lot of features, and we kind of talked about that on the last show, but I'll just end that by saying that basically if you have the 4S or higher, so a two-year-old model or better, or iPad all the way back to the second version of the Mini, you can upgrade your mobile operating system, and it's free, and it's well worth it. There's lots of great features. We can maybe talk about that. We talked about that last week. You can maybe go play that show.
Yep, absolutely. And I had one note from my tech guy this morning saying don't do the update on your Mac
to
10.11.
Desktop.
On my desktop, on my MacBook Pro. He said if you value your Outlook, and that's the old Outlook or the new 2016, do not do that update yet. There's some issues, and Microsoft's aware of it.
We should maybe just give everybody
not
the,
be able to use
the,
that.
The so Apple this week just yesterday actually released the desktop operating system. That's for your iMac, your MacBook Air, Mac Pro, all of those. The desktop operating system, and it's 10.11. And it's a free update, and it's a great update. And it takes about, you know, it's about 6 gig to download, so it's pretty sizable, but for a desktop operating system, not so bad. Mm-hmm. You can download it now. And like you said, that there is a small, or it's kind of a big hang-up with Microsoft Outlook. Though I would not be so dramatic as say, if you value this, or just don't do it. Maybe wait till there's a patch, which will be soon. I haven't heard of a lot of other issues, although desktop operating systems tend to have hang-ups on software that needs to get updated. It's strange that Microsoft, you know, didn't patch that, because, you know, the golden master of El Capitan, which is the code name, has been out for a long time. I'm surprised when that got released that they didn't fix that. So that's a minor snafu as far as I'm concerned.
Can you roll back operating systems?
You can, and there are ways to do that. Just don't. It's a pain.
Okay.
You know, if you're in the situation where you've updated and you have a problem with Microsoft Outlook on your computer,
yep.
Which I bet there's only a fraction of the people out there using Macs that are using Outlook. I wonder what that percentage would be. But if you have done that, instead of rolling back, what I would do is just get your email through the web interface for a while, which is a lot, you know, easier than uninstalling an entire operating system, okay. Reinstalling, and just kind of maybe use somebody else's computer, use your mobile device, get around it. The patch, I would be surprised if the next time we have a show, it already hasn't been out for a week. Right. So
those happen fairly quickly.
Well, something big like this, Microsoft Office, obviously it's a huge company. It's kind of a PR nightmare for them. Apple was probably going to help because it's not so nice for them either. So I would imagine that update's going to be soon. It may be out there already. We just haven't seen it yet. So.
Okay. Well, we need to take a quick break. When we come back, we want to talk a little bit about chip and pin. We've talked about it on the program before, but today's the day, so it's appropriate to talk about that, to discuss that with our folks here today. Also, keep in mind our next show, October 16th, is the next Tech Radio. So jot that down while we're away, and we'll be right back after this. And welcome back to this October edition of Tech Radio featuring the Computer Guys. I have Amos Aesop in the studio today from DataSync. Joel Brovelite is here, Matt Guru. And on the phone, we have Jeff Litterick with the Bureau in Peer, taking your questions and calls today. So we were just talking during the break. You're just saying you really shouldn't call it chip and pin, because in the U.S. we don't use the pin part. We just use the chip part.
We just do the half. We just do the easy half.
So you know you have the chip in your card if there's that little gold kind of computer chip looking thing embossed on one end of it.
Yeah, a lot of people have had this and didn't even know it. Like American Express has had that in many of their cards for a long time. And you maybe just didn't even notice that there was a difference. But the big deal is it's we're now to the point, I think, is it today or is it yesterday?
I think it's today.
It was yesterday, the 1st of October.
Yeah, where you actually, when you go to buy something, you're required, I think except for a very few cases, to insert the card rather than swipe the card, because these cards, of course, have both a magnetic strip and the microchip on them right now.
Right now, yeah.
And it probably will for a long time, to be honest with you. But what we were talking about, and I don't want to preempt this and talk over everybody, but we were talking about inserting the card. That's the chip part. That's great. That's way more secure, and that's great for everybody that has it. And it's a little disconcerting the first time you go to use it, but trust me, by the time Christmas shopping is over, you won't even remember that you did it differently. But the downside is, and I wish somebody could give me an explanation other than, you know, total sloth.
Americans are lazy.
Yeah, that for the most part, we're not using the pin part. So you put your card in, and then you, just like before, they print something out or you sign a screen and you're good to go. It seems like, okay, it's safer, and it is. But the part we're missing is putting the four-digit pin in. We're all used to that because we use it on our ATMs when you go to get cash.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what the hang-up is. That's what it should be. But instead, you know, banks have said, well, we won't give you a code. That's fine. You just sign like you used to. And a signature is just so much worse and less able to litigate, then if you have that PIN number, that four-digit number, anybody can sign your name. I mean, even if they don't know what your signature looks like, they can sign your name. But if you don't have that number, you know, nobody can take your card and pay with it if they don't have that number.
It's not like there's a – yeah, it compares your signature to something and says, oh, yeah,
never.
That's close enough.
No,
that's
not at all. I mean, and I strongly encourage somebody – oh, maybe not. I shouldn't say that. I was going to say, go ahead, sign Charlie Brown when you sign. It won't ever come back. It doesn't matter what you sign. It's totally irrelevant. Don't do that because I'll probably get in trouble. But signatures don't matter. They're not secure.
A lot of places don't even ask you for a signature.
Of course.
A certain dollar amount.
Yeah, and that keeps getting higher. Have you noticed that it's like under 10, under 15? Last place I went to was, it doesn't matter if it's under 50. It doesn't matter if it's under 50,000. You know, pretty soon it's not going to matter. You know, that should tell you right there the signatures are irrelevant.
And what I didn't realize right off the bat was that little gold embossed thing on your card, that's not the chip. That's just a logo.
Yeah.
The chip's in your card.
Mm-hmm.
So, I kind of got concerned because I've been using my card quite a bit, and that thing's starting to wear off, and I'm like, I'm ruining my chip. Well, that's not the chip.
No, it's way smaller. They would never put something that big in there.
I don't know why. You know, it looks like a chip. So I just figured it was a chip.
So, Jeff, have you used a chip card? Your opinion on chip and pin?
Only two of my four cards have the chip. At this point, even though everyone was supposed to have them this last Thursday and all the merchants were supposed to be able to take them, and to be honest and pure, I haven't ran into a merchant yet that actually lets you slide and use the chip itself. So it's going to be interesting. And it's going to come. I mean, Europe's been doing this for 10 years already, so...
At least.
Yeah, so, well, we don't seem to be in a hurry over here because we have actually less credit card fraud than they do. It needs to come in, and it's just as easy to stick the card in. It's like an ATM, right? You're using it like an ATM card. You stick it in, you put a pin in, and take it right back out. So everyone's familiar with it. It's just we need to get all the merchants moved over.
Yeah, pretty much everybody that takes a credit card needs a new machine, and it's going to take a little bit. And I think there's been some relaxing of dates on the retail side of things.
There are a lot of retailers that can't even get a hold of the machine. I heard an instance of one that was backordered until January. They couldn't get their hands on a machine. Mm-hmm. Although, in that same time, if you've purchased a credit card machine as a retailer in the past 3 or 4 years, it already had that capability built in, so you're going to talk an ever decreasing amount of retailers that don't already have access to that.
Yeah, just got a question and an email question on a different topic, and Jeff, let's go to you. Joe asks, I have a Dell desktop. It's 5 to 6 years old, running Windows Home Premium. I'm assuming that's maybe Windows 7 Home Premium. Can I upgrade to Windows 10, and should I, and is there any cost to that? I know we've talked about it on the show, but why don't you go ahead and answer that for Joe?
The easiest way is make sure you have Windows Update turned on, basically automatic updates if you go into computer management or you go into your services. If that's turned on, you should be getting a little window if you're eligible to upgrade to Windows 10. It looks like the Windows key, and it will be down in the quick bar in the lower, right-hand corner. And it actually is getting pretty annoying on me, keeps popping up wanting me to upgrade. If you do not see that and you have Windows Update turned on, you are not eligible to get at least a free update in place. You'd have to go buy it retail. And there's probably an issue with the computer not supporting Windows 10. If you do get that, you can click on that, and it will actually run a whole program that will check out your computer to make sure that you can run Windows 10, check out all the drivers and other necessary parts of your computer. And if you're good to go, you can then, for free, for this year from basically when it was released in July until next July, it's going to be free, and you can just update it any time then. If you're not seeing that, you probably need to contact support because there's some problem that's not being supported in Windows 10 yet.
Okay. So definitely it's not that the computer is old. If he gets the free update, he can just go ahead and do that. Mm-hmm. There isn't going to be necessarily a problem.
Yeah, and it will double-check everything to make sure that, you know, your computer is ready for Windows 10 and that all the drivers are out and stuff, and that it can upgrade successfully. So going that route is the best. You can always go and buy a copy and stick the CD in and see what happens, but you've already kind of bought something when you maybe probably don't need to. I would be more concerned if that's not showing up and the Windows Update service is running. That's not showing up. There's some problem, some incompatibility, and you may not be able to upgrade to Windows 10 or maybe not upgrade for a couple more months until some new drivers and stuff come out. So,
mm-hmm. Jeff, have you, jumping topics again, have you heard much on the Experian data breach yet that involved T-Mobile customers, or is that so new that maybe you haven't heard of it?
Well, there's two major ones as of yesterday.
Okay.
There's the T-Mobile. And then a crowdsourcing fund site, 14 terabytes of its data got basically confiscated. So Proteon, I think if you donated or crowdsourced fund through Proteon, all your information was stolen this week too. And that one was actually posted publicly, all that data up on the web. And then we got T-Mobile, and I think it's, I want to say 14 million customers. Their data got hacked through a credit card processor. Basically, when you sign up for Verizon or AT&T or a lot of stuff anymore, they do a credit check on you. Even, you know, your insurance companies do credit checks on you anymore. And the company that actually got hacked wasn't T-Mobile. It was the company they signed up to do these credit checks. So when you sign up for service, they would do a credit check on you, and they would pass it on and hopefully delete that stuff. But they did delete everything, it looks like. And then T-Mobile gets the results, yay or nay, right? Well, their processing partner got compromised and all that data got stolen from doing all the credit checks. And it doesn't even mean you signed up successfully, T-Mobile, that you just tried to. So if you tried to sign up for T-Mobile at some time, maybe you decided not to go with them after the fact, they still ran that credit check when you applied, even if you didn't complete the application. So be careful and be watching, like we say almost every time, watch your data, identity theft identifiers, so to speak, your credit card bills, your banking bills, notices you may get in the mail about weird stuff. So keep an eye on that right now.
I you know, just to point out, I did reach out to T-Mobile this morning, and they got back to me and said, you know, less than 1% of the population of South Dakota actually has any T-Mobile customers, so we don't really need to worry about that part. The interesting part of this story, I thought, was the data was encrypted that was stolen, but somehow that encryption was either damaged or compromised, and that's how they were able to actually get the names and numbers and all the stuff that they were able to get. That's what I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah, you have to remember, encryption is not a panacea. It's part of a defense. And the reason I say that is because to use the data ever after you encrypt it, there has to be a way to unencrypt it, right? And if they broke in and they had a big enough hack, they probably got the keys to the encryption that were being used to encrypt the data, which allows them to unencrypt without anything. And then also, as time marches on, computers get faster. The encryption we used in the early 90s, it was called DES. It was put out by the Defense Department. Very tough for the time, and it was very secure at the time. On a modern computer, I can break that encryption in less than half a second. Computers have advanced, right? And as we keep advancing, you have to keep up. So a lot of people, and actually DES is still used in HTTPS. Many servers were still supporting it, but it can be almost instantly cracked. So as new encryption protocols come out and stuff, it's always an advancement, right? And sometimes people don't keep up with the advancements and are not selecting the right options as time marches on. That this encryption, which was really good, you know, 10 years ago, is worthless today, and you need to make sure you keep up. So, and there's always problems in weak mathematics. All encryption is based off mathematics. And sometimes people, after the fact, find shortcuts that allow them to decrypt stuff easier than people thought it would be possible to, or take less computer time than they thought it would be possible to because of mistakes in the implementation. So when you do encryption behind the scenes, keep your products updated, but there's always changes going on every, you know, every year there's new protocols coming out, and older ones have been hacked and been replaced and revoked. So, but those are the two things that breaks most encryption.
That was what I was. My next question was going to be to you, and I think you just answered it. Was, are there stronger encryptions coming out? Are there better algorithms written, or what? Who does that? Mathematicians, or is that a computer programming kind of a thing, or just?
There's kind of a whole subfield of cryptology in the mathematics field, and everyone's heard of the Amiga and the code breakers and stuff. Well, the same people that do code breaking using mathematics use mathematics to create new algorithms that are more secure. So, you know, it's kind of hand in half. One day I'm breaking for the NSA this, and the next day for the NSA I'm actually creating a new, more secure version. And yes, as computers got faster, we can pit more CPU cycles to encryption, so we can expand the encryption key space, which makes it harder to de-encrypt. We can let the computer spend more time, CPU time, doing stronger encryptions because the whole computer's faster. You know, a modern encryption, if you went back to the 90s and tried it on a PAM4, to encrypt a file may take 10 hours. Well, now it's a few seconds. So the massive amount of mathematical processing that's happened in the past 20 years has really infected, and there's going to be another jump. We won't get into it with quantum cryptology and quantum computing, but there's a whole nother giant leap in mathematical processing power coming up that's going to make it both easier to break the existing stuff and allow new harder ones to break. So
this may be completely jumping tracks here on the train that we're going on, but I've noticed in the last couple of computers that I've owned, it asks me in the setup process if I want to encrypt the data on my drives. And is that sort of the same thing? Is it worth it to do that?
It can be. It depends how it's done. For computers to encrypt the whole thing, there's two ways that are currently done right now. And one of them is just software, right? It's a software encryption, so if someone steals your computer and if you use strong passwords and they can't brute force your password, it's pretty safe because the drives, if they take them out of the computer, are still encrypted. The other version of encryption that's becoming very, very popular because it doesn't have a performance impact on SSDs is hardware-level encryption that's done at the drive level, normally by SSDs, automatically. So whenever you write anything to the SSD, it's automatically encrypted. Now, that's a little bit more of a hardware basis in the BIOS and what's called the TPM chip. It's a special chip on the motherboard that handles keys to the computer. So if you took that hard drive out and you stuck it in another computer, you wouldn't ever be able to read it. But if you could break BIOS passwords and install an OS, you could read it on that same computer. So, you know, there's different levels, and you get different performance and stuff out. Either one for the normal user would be more than sufficient.
Joel, what kind is on my Mac that was I offered when I powered this up?
You, very, very like Windows, if you want to encrypt your drive, there is an option to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It is not, it won't ask you at setup if you want to do that. You actually have to go in, reformat the drive, and ask for deeper encryption. I wouldn't recommend anyone do that unless you already know it. If you already know it's there, and then you already have made the decision. I wouldn't recommend anybody do that. Apple probably has some of the best built-in encryption, and I'm not bragging here. They just have some of the best encryption built into the operating system itself. It's about as safe as it's going to get. Just like Jeff mentioned, just have a good password, and that's probably your best bet. So it's already encrypted the files itself. The drive is not encrypted. That would be another level of encryption that you don't necessarily need. Unless you need it, you know, if you need it, you know that, and you probably already know how to do that. If you're a regular user and you want to protect your photos or financial stuff, you probably don't need to do that.
When I asked, do I want to do this?
No.
When that question popped up, it's like, well, do you ever want to see your data again if you have a problem?
Yeah,
like,
right.
Well, yeah.
There's a little of that. You know, and actually, Tim Cook was actually on Marketplace on NPR yesterday. And no, he wasn't on Marketplace. He was on Morning Edition. He was on All Things Considered. There we go. Now I got it. Yesterday. You can listen back. Go to all things considered, and listened yesterday. It was a really good interview. And he talked a lot about encryption and about how they have basically, in the past several updates, basically handed the keys over to your computer and your data to you, and they do not have access to it. If they wanted to, they couldn't give the NSA or the government or your neighbor down the street access to your files. They just literally cannot do it.
Wow.
It's all stored all behind the password that you have without any extra anything, whether it's a laptop or a phone. If you don't give the password to somebody, they can't get your data even if they want to. So it's a very good system. And it's, you don't have to take their word for it. You can read the white papers on it. And the fact that, you know, I'm not a big government hater, but the fact that the government is worried about the fact that they couldn't get in even with a subpoena should probably tell you that Apple can't get in to your stuff, nor can anyone else without the password. So the bottom line is just have a really good password.
And some would say that's probably the way it should be.
Well, I think a lot of people feel that way. Certainly Apple sees that most people would rather not have anybody be able to get into their personal stuff. And I think they're taking a very, you know, very good view of what the public wants and giving them what they want with their data. I know I personally am not worried about it, but I like that Apple is listening to its customers, and they're not the only company that's doing that, by the way.
Right.
I think that's a trend. But that's the long answer to your question. Yes, you can do it, but don't.
All right. Well, what we do need to do is go to a break and take care of a little business. When we come back, we've got a little bit of ad blocking to talk about. We've got an update on that whole story that we talked about 2 weeks ago. And there's a new website out. It's called People, and it's spelled differently than I know Joel would spell it. And it's got getting some attention. Its founders are making big claims, and there's probably some reasons for concern. We'll talk about those after this break. And welcome back to Tech Radio, featuring the computer guys here from the University of Sioux Falls. We have Joel Brovelite today, and Amos Aesop is with us as well from DataSync. And joining us on the phone, as always, Jeff Litterick, the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications in Pierre. We'd love to have Jeff with us today. Jeff, you and I talked a little bit about ad blocking plugins and things for browsers on the last show, and right after we got off the show, I went ahead and installed some things, and I tried a couple different ones, and everything, I tell you, my experience was good. I really had zero issues, and I noticed things were better, and I noticed up in the corner that it kind of keeps a little counter of how many pop-ups it's blocking, and it was really doing a good job. And then news comes along shortly thereafter that some ad blocking companies, and particularly the one I'm using, are now starting to whitelist some ads. And why would they do that?
To be the cynical part, it's all about the money, right? To whitelist those ads, and it's interesting because we're going to get, I'll talk a little bit about this, a whole telecom that's doing the same thing. Is if it's a reputable source and they're willing to pay the companies some money, they will whitelist some of their ads. Now, that's not something that you can't override. You can always go in and you can select different. There's different lists in there besides the default list that you can work your way around. But companies are starting to pay to allow their ads. In fact, in the Bahamas, the ISP down there is demanding money from. If you want to send ads over their network to their users, and if you don't pay them, they are planning to block all ads at a network-wide layer for all their users unless you pay them to allow the ads to go through. So I whitelist some sites that I wish to support and stuff. I blacklist other ones because their ads are so outrageous it just blows up the whole experience. Mostly why I use the ad blocking is, one, it speeds up the web. And the second one is security. A lot of malware gets infected on machines through the ads that you see on your screen and advertising networks. And luckily, up to this point, I kind of trust the company's whitelisting, that it's just really the really major ones and not the bad stuff coming through. And I really haven't seen, I see a few ads here and there come through, but not too many. And they seem to be pretty well-tamed ads in that they're not the overlay ads that block you from viewing the site and that kind of stuff that get in your way. So, you know, it is a problem, and probably even more of a problem in the future with that, with more people willing to pay. But at least as long as you can always override it, I guess I'm not having much of a problem, because the developers need to have some money for developing these apps. So,
I guess, yeah, that was the message that I got from the company, the ad block company, was, hey, some of these, some of your favorite websites may really need the money, so you might want to consider whitelisting some of them, the ones that you choose to support, or you can still keep blocking everything. And that was kind of the A or B button I had, and I know which one I took at the time. But I just thought that was interesting that there was that all of a sudden, you know, there was we got into the ad block discussion because of the app that came out for the new OS or iOS 9 mobile update that allowed you to block ads on your phone and your or your mobile device. And then we started talking about the browser plugins that were available to do sort of the same thing to make your web experience better for a number of reasons, and you highlighted those, thank you. But then there's this big kind of revelation. It seems like it seems like to me that the whole app on the iPhone thing brought the whole discussion to a head in the industry. It's like, well, what are we going to do? This is how we make our money. What are we going to do about it?
Yeah, what I think happened was ad blockers have been out for a long time, especially in Firefox and Chrome. But it was always a percentage of the population. So the websites themselves weren't losing that much money. Some maybe a little bit more than others, depending if it was more to a technical crowd that would tend to have the ad blockers. But it was still a small percentage. But when you get it out in the general public and everyone's downloading it, remember, if everyone ad blocks everything, 90% of the internet gets turned off because they can't pay the bills. Your favorite websites are going to go bye-bye because the ads are how they're making their money, right? Unless they have some type of revenue service. So you have to go to a pay-for web, a pay-for internet, right? I want to access Wowhead, for example, to see stuff, or I'm going to have to pay for a subscription, because if everyone blocks their ads, they have no money to actually put up the pages. So I think it's going to be even more and more as it gets more and more common. It just hit that critical threshold of the number of users using it that it really started impacting advertisers and some websites in real money terms.
Yeah, that's a great update. And again, those are little extensions or plugins for depending on what browser you use. A way you can get in there and play with that a little bit if you want to do that. What's your experience with the new Windows browser, Jeff? Do you like that? Is it working well? Is it called Edge?
Yes, it's called Edge. I really haven't done much with it because if you're a business with a lot of IE apps, don't expect a lot of them to work in Edge. And that's mainly what I use IE for anymore. I migrate most of my personal and other browsing that doesn't require IE to Chrome and stuff. It seems okay. I haven't had any problems with the little bit I've used it, but I haven't used it enough to really say I'm kind of defaulting back to IE 11 on Windows 7 and stuff. But we are actually going to be testing a lot of that stuff out here over the next couple of months, so we're going to get much more deep into the weeds. And I think for most consumers, Edge is just fine. I didn't really see any problems with Edge surfing, you know, the internet large. Where we started to see a lot of problems is with custom or business type apps that are a little bit older and stuff.
Great. Hey, I want to mention to listeners, Science Friday is up in just a few minutes. You're going to want to stay tuned. There are a number of topics. We're going to talk about Paxil reanalysis, drug mouse avatars, from Dothraki to Valyrian, building the languages of the Games of Thrones. Game of Thrones is a topic today, and then Science Goes to the Movies. They're going to talk about The Martian on Science Friday, and you mentioned that as a topic for today's show because it's so cool.
It is. That'll be well worth listening to.
I listened to an interview with the author of that book, and one of the more interesting questions from the NPR host was, "You gave this away. Why did you do that?" And it was kind of a funny answer. The guy said, "Well, I realized I wasn't going to be an author." And he's a software programmer, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Right? Clearly, he wasn't right about that.
Well, but the deep this is it was called the most scientifically accurate book on Mars. I mean, as far as like a novel. A novel, mm-hmm. Correct? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, how did that happen?
Well, yeah, I'm sure they'll talk about this during the show, but basically, he wrote his first draft and put it on his personal blog, and then invited people he knew and other people he didn't know to kind of check the math, so to speak. I put that in air quotes, and kind of just revised it from there on. It's a really great story.
So he crowdsourced the technical information on the novel that became this movie.
Yeah, and also did a lot of research on his own as well. So he didn't just rely on other people, but relied on other people to check it, rather than just some non-tech person or person in maybe one field. But he got, you know, whether it was mathematicians or geologists or botanists or planetologists, it's not a word.
It is today.
It is today. So really great story.
Again, that's coming up on Science Friday, right after this show and right after the news from NPR as well. Amos, did you have something?
I know.
No, okay. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that people knew that Amos Aesop is here with us.
Okay.
He is not dead yet.
All right. There's a new website that's getting some play on the internet right now. It's called People, and that's P-E-E-P-L-E, not like
not
the magazine.
Not spelled like
or,
you would.
Or you would. Uh-huh. It's interesting because the founders of the website are basically saying it's like Yelp for human beings.
Yes.
It's a rating site, and the less interesting part for me is that you can't dispute bad reviews
but okay. And you also can't opt out.
Right.
That's the scary part.
Yeah, so, this is for educators.
Just in case you didn't want to sleep tonight. Just know that somebody could rate you on People, and you can't do anything about it.
Now, this has been around for educators for a few years.
Sure, yeah.
Students have gone online and said good and some very bad things about their professors online. And other students know where to go to check that when they're signing up for classes. Now, this could be a good thing.
Well, I think it's just an evolution, you know. Here's the deal. If it winds up being just a place for people to complain about other people, it won't take off. It will not be, you know, the only way it'll take off as a social media or a rating site or you know, gain any traction is if it's actually useful and if it's, you know, there's a way for it to be fair. That's my opinion, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't think it's anything really to get worked up and worried about. If it gains traction, it'll be because it's truly useful.
So it's got to be more useful than Angie's List and LinkedIn. And I'm just trying to think of some other websites out there that are sort of doing the same thing.
Although this is more of a social thing rather than a business this is a way to rate somebody on a social level, not so much on a business transaction level.
Okay.
So like you can rate Steve, whoever Steve is, and say, well, you know, I went out with Steve for dinner one night and he made me pay because he pretended he didn't have his wallet, even though I could see it right there. He's a jerk. Don't be friends with Steve. That's the kind of thing that you would see on People.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't see this taking off.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to be honest, I see the 4-channel and 8-channel groups salivating, waiting to abuse the system massively for everyone they don't like. So.
Well, that's unfortunate, and it's also unfortunate that we're out of time for today's show. I want to thank my panelists today, Jeff, Joel, and Amos, for being here, and remind you that SDPB is always there for you with our app or at sdpb.org. Just go there and click on Listen. And we're also there for you 24 hours a day on Facebook. Facebook.com/techradio is where you can go for more information about the show or to leave comments or post more questions. Again, Tech Radio on Facebook, facebook.com/techradio. That's all the time we have for today. Science Friday is up next after this news from NPR.